Hello everyone, I am Isaiah Jacobs and I am here with Kadath. Kadath, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, over the past year in 2012, you started releasing art bundles and small comics here and there. Let's start off with the art bundles.
Okay.
Why did you decide to start releasing these? Tell us a little bit about these art bundles.
Okay. Well, basically, they're packs of images I've done, usually recently. Like the first bundle was a collection of recent stuff, but also stuff from like last year or two, just pictures I had never posted online before, or personal favorites of mine, or fan favorites. And then after that, it's been basically what I've done in between the bundles. So like the last bundle I did was basically all my material from December. A bundle before that's like everything from November, so they're almost like monthly bundles, and they usually have your commissions and personal pictures on there, and I include like the high res versions, and I include like a bunch of sketches. I do lots of sketches and just kind of brainstorm pictures, and I put those in there too, and I do like alternate versions of some pictures, like maybe something is. I'll have some dialogue, and then I'll have a version without the dialogues. We'll just have just the image proper. were you going to ask about like why I was going to do this?
Yeah. Why have you decided to release these art bundles with some of the art being never before seen?
Well, I had a friend who was doing these, like, I guess monthly. Image packs, and they were like high res packs, about $5 each, and they have about, you know, 10-20 pictures, sometimes more. And it's just like high res versions of pictures that were already available online. And she was like, you know, these sell really well, and it's just a nice little extra thing on the side. And she was doing it through PayPal. And some other people were doing similar things. They were selling like art bundles and stuff. And years before, I had done art CDs. Where I would like collect a whole year's worth of artwork into a CD, and then making the CDs got kind of laborious. So I tried this thing called drop cards, which were like cards that have a unique code on the back, and it's like a one-time digital download. So they basically go to the drop cards site and they download like a zip file that has basically an art CD's content on there. And I had plans to do at least like four or five drop cards. I only ended up doing two, and it's because they really didn't sell well. I think some people were just confused about the cards, like, you know, what is a card? What is this? And so then I came across Gumroad, and I started using them because it's just like really fast, secure, simple. You know, you just go on there, you just enter your credit card information, and you get like an instant link to download a digital file, and then it also emails it to you. And you can just go back to your email and find it, and if you don't want it right then and there. And so I decided to just kind of take all these things, combine them. And so basically I was like, okay, what would I want to see if I were to, like, you know, look at somebody's digital art packs? And I was like, well, obviously I want, you know, high-res versions because I like looking at the details and stuff, and some people want to make wallpapers and stuff. And then I was like, I want to see sketches. Want to see like the behind the scenes, like the brainstorming process, and I want to see artwork I couldn't find elsewhere, and so I just figured I'll just do that, and I've been doing that every month basically for the last half a year or so, and it's been doing really well, and people seem to really like that. You know, it's cheap, it's simple, and it's got a lot of exclusive content. At least for a while, it's exclusive. I usually post my favorites on FA, but I still leave some stuff that I don't post anywhere on the downloads exclusively. So,
to go back to a comment you said a few minutes ago, you said you got this idea from a friend of yours. Could you say who this artist was?
Oh yeah, it was Tojo.
Tojo?
Yeah. She actually, I think she recently started using Gumroad. A lot of people actually have started to use them as well. Like I think I've seen like Sigil has used them, and Skid and some other artists are now using Gumroad, doing like the digital pack thing. And I'm glad because you know it's a system that I think is a really cool idea, and I hope it gets a lot of support. The you know like the quick and simple digital download method.
Going forward with this concept of the art bundle, are there any alternatives that you think you might want to go to in the future?
What do you mean by all alternatives?
Just more efficient alternatives to purchasing and downloading art bundles.
I don't really know if it would get any more efficient than it is with that site because it's literally like if you haven't saved your credit card info, you can just one click purchase and it's just like instantly ready for you to download or email to you. But I know that I eventually would like to have like a web page with like a catalog, and it would have you know the images of the art packs or comics on there, and then it would have like maybe some preview images, and then it have like a link. You just click the link, and it takes you to the site, and you can just download the file. But that requires me to actually design a web page. I don't really know much about website design, and so it's kind of like a daunting prospect for me.
And then to actually buy the server space.
I think that what I would probably do is I would find somebody who knows how to code, and I would probably get like a Tumblr page modded.
I see.
That yeah, something simple, something that doesn't require, because like I used to have a website, and I had a friend who set it up for me, but like I don't really know coding or web design stuff, and so I was just like, how do I change? What do I do? And so I really didn't do much with it. I really didn't understand enough about website stuff to actually be able to modify it on my own. But with like something like Tumblr, you know, it's just like a blog, so I can just be like, you know, add a new comic, you know, voila, there, done. Very simple, very straightforward, and that'd probably be something that I would do is just, you know, use a modified Tumblr page.
Okay. And to go alongside with these art bundles that you've released, you've also been coming out with small comics, with your latest one being Coffee Meets. Understand that the characters in all these comics are part in an overall webcomic universe that you are currently developing called The Londoners. Could you please explain a little bit about this universe?
Well, the characters are the ones I've been drawing since I started using my Kadath moniker, and so I think it's been since 2005 I've been working on these characters, and they've changed a lot since back then. A lot of the original ideas for them have been heavily modified over the time, but basically everything that I've done with like the comics and stuff featuring them, it's all part of this overall story, which I really haven't gone into yet. And like, sometimes it's kind of frustrating because like I really want to make the comic, the web comic, but it's such a big project, and a lot of the stuff is so spoiler heavy if I really want to, you know, go into detail about like there's a comic I may want to make, but it's set like near the end of the Londoners webcomic chronologically, and so it would be like a major spoiler for like something that, you know, I want to kind of build audience anticipation for during the webcomic. So it's the comic is basically ready to be started on in terms of actually like, you know, doing like the full page sketching inks and color and all that stuff. The thumbnail outlines I've done for the project, I'm about maybe two-thirds through with it, and it's already past like, you know, it's like almost 300 pages just with the first two-thirds of the story. So it's a massive book, well, I guess webcomic, but But it basically tells the whole story of all the characters. It talks about their histories and their relationships with each other. And the webcomic will not be like adult content. It's going to be, I guess you say like an R rating, but it's not going to be like an X. So the adult comics I do would be stuff on the side, kind of like they're canonical, but they're not, they're kind of like what happens in between scenes kind of a thing. Like the webcomic may have a part where, you know, something, a character's meet, whatever, and then it cuts to another scene, but then I might do a comic that elaborates on that meeting that's on the side.
So sort of like what Jay Naylor does with his work, how he'll have the regular comic and then he'll do the adult stuff on the side.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I've never read his webcomic, but okay. I do know about his... I know about it, and I've of course seen his adult comics, but I haven't actually read his main webcomic. But that's what I've heard, is that, yeah, he does this kind of thing where he has... I don't know if it's all ages, but it's not porno, you know, it's not pornographic, but like the main comic is the basic story, all the character interactions, all that stuff, and then he has the adult comics on the side that kind of elaborate on things.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say just like that probably.
And so with the comics that you've released so far, like Coffee Meat and all the others, would you say that they're really just more character development comics and just encounters between the characters that really have nothing to do with the plot?
So far, yeah. Dangerous Bedroom Behavior, which was the one I did in 2011. That one is just like a fun little side story. Is not important to the main storyline or whatever. Coffee Meat is actually a little bit different, where it is the first time that Sebastian and Puzzle meet each other, like canonically the first time they met each other, and is actually part of a longer project I'm working on. I've actually already done the sequel, like in like sketching and, you know, thumbnailing and all that stuff, and where it's actually about how it's basically when like Puzzle and Diamond move in together, and then basically kind of like how a relationship forms between Puzzle and Sebastian and Dax and Diamond, and kind of like explores the dynamics between them, because the universe I made is, it has this kind of thing, like, people sometimes joke, because in my adult work, you know, I do commissions and whatever, and so my characters tend to, you know, be commissioned to be with other people's characters and whatever, and people joke about, like, them, like, having, you know, kids and whatever, and it's like, I may draw a puzzle with, like, a dragon, people are like, oh, what are the kids gonna look like, and I'm like, all right, you know. In the Londoners universe, only characters of the, you know, same or similar species can have offspring. It's just like how in our world, like a tiger and a lion could, you know, breed and they could have a liger, but usually they're sterile, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
It breeds like, you know, like a mule and a, you know, it's just like it's a sterile offspring. It's not its own species. So you're not going to have like cat dogs walking around in the Londoners universe. You're not going to have like a dragon griffin walking, hey guys, how's it going? It's going to be like you'll have, you know, wolves, you'll have foxes, and, you know, you'll have your cat species. And like, so like, you know, Diamond is a zebra and Puzzle is a giraffe. Well, Diamond could conceivably, no pun intended, have offspring with a horse character, but that character may be sterile. Puzzle really can't breed with anybody but other giraffes. So, but funnily enough, I don't think I even actually have any characters have children in the Londoners universe. I guess it's just something that I just never really thought of until now, but Let's see. I'm going on a tangent here. But yeah, so because of that, and you have a lot more of a there's less of a sexual stigma. So you have, Diamond may fool around with Sebastian. Sebastian's a canine, and they won't have any offspring. And so basically, there's less of a risk there, and so sexual promiscuity may not be looked upon the same way in Blunder's universe as it is in our own world. At the same time, there's this kind of racial dynamic tension going on between the groups, where you have herbivores and carnivores. There's also omnivores, of course, but they're kind of like this straddling the middle kind of thing. But there's kind of this division, which plays a big part in Londoner's story, where you have this herbivore view of things and this carnivore view of things. And there's a lot of stereotypes and misconceptions, and there's also some truths to it. It's something that I kind of touched on in Dangerous Bedroom Behavior, how Nightshade, who is a jackal, kind of likes to kind of role play being like a predator with Patrick, who's a giraffe. So, he's her prey, kind of a thing, and so she kind of roughs him up and stuff, when they're being, sexy in bed and whatever. It's a dynamic and stuff. And this extends even to things like restaurants. You have restaurants in the Londoner's universe that only cater to carnivores or only to herbivores. So they may have like a like I think the restaurant at the beginning of Dangerous Bedroom Behavior was called the Omni, as an omnivore, because it serves food for both types of I don't know what the word is, but for both groups. It extends to politics. The two political parties in Londoner's universe are the herds and the packs. So, it's just like there's like this kind of like food chain style thing going on that kind of permeates everything. And it extends into relationships too. Like if a carnivore like Sebastian, is publicly dating like Puzzle, who's a herbivore, it may not be looked upon very well. It may be kind of like a thing. Like it may not be like outright, it's not like something that they would be like thrown in jail for, or people would attack them for, but maybe kind of like looked down upon. Kind of like how like the early 20th century United States was, when you had desegregation and all stuff. And you had a lot of racial tension between blacks and whites, especially when it came to like marriage and dating and stuff like that. It's similar to that, where it's kind of like, it's allowed, but it's kind of like, there's a lot of tension there between the races.
So would you say that this Londoners comic is going to heavily be a slice of life type of comic?
I've gone through different iterations of it, and I've even thought about making it very sci-fi based. But I always felt like it ended up detracting from the main story, which was always about the characters. And like I even considered having there be a plot where, towards the end of the story, they find out that humans were actually like their creators and stuff like that, and but part of that's my brain trying to justify why there's, walking, talking animal people and basically a universe that is similar to our own. But I basically just ended up deciding, well, it's just an alternate universe. Let's just leave it like that. If Marvel and DC can do it, I guess I can too. And so it used to have a heavy sci-fi slant, but it definitely is more of a, I guess more of a slice of life, because it's so character and relationship based. But there is, because of like the social tensions and race tensions I mentioned, there is also some dramatic elements. There's an overall story, that our overall background thing going on, that's this kind of dramatic situation these characters are in. It influences their interactions. But I would say, because I guess it's because whenever I think of slice of life, I think of like, silly kind of comedies.
Oh, yeah.
But it definitely will have heavy comedic elements. I'm kind of known for my silly stuff in my comics, but I do want to kind of I do have some stuff I want to say, and so I want to have that dramatic element in there too. So I
Okay,
guess
I see.
a slice of life, but also a drama, a dramedy.
Hey, there you go. There you go. To go on a well, no, never mind. Okay, so just a moment ago, you mentioned how this whole species division conflict goes into politics, and how there are two parties called herds and packs. What type of species makes up the herds and packs parties?
Because this is set in London, I would use probably mostly animal species that are native to the area, or at least I mean, like, it's kind of funny saying native because like Sebastian is like a Saluki hound, and he's and th that that's like a domesticated dog breed. So there's going to be like domestic breeds of cats and dogs, so it probably make up the majority of something like the carnivore side. There'd be like wolves, foxes. The herbivore side would probably be mostly things like deer, elk, stuff like that. I've thought about putting reptiles into the Lenders universe, but I don't really know if I want to. Partly because I don't think I'm very good at drawing reptiles. And the other reason is because I Londoners ties into another story I wrote, which is like an ancient history story. And it's set like thousands of years before all this. And it's kind of like the basis of what species we see in universe in the Lenders universe are their roots are in this ancient world story. And I just don't I might have reptiles in that, but I think that part of the backstory to Londoners may also be that there was a lot of racial tensions that resulted in warfare and genocide, and there are some species that were just wiped out. And it would be interesting to have this backstory about, like, there were reptiles, just like how we had dinosaurs. They had reptile anthros, but they were killed off by the mammals. So there's like that kind of that history of that genocidal history that they have back then. They probably are. I don't know if they'd be ashamed of it because it happened so long ago, but at the same time, they may be kind of like, this has happened once before. We should be careful what we do nowadays.
Yeah.
But like I've had people ask me if I'm gonna have fish, fish anthros and whale anthros and birds, and I'm like, no, I don't think so. I think that the mammals would probably end up taking over, and if there were variances on the or variations on the species that into like different genuses or whatever, I think that the mammals would have probably wiped them out. So, and there's no mythical creatures, there's no dragons, there's no griffins and stuff like that. So I try to keep it rooted in more of a realistic kind of thing.
Going back to the political system real quick, I'm just personally curious, which party is liberal and which party is conservative?
I'm trying to remember which one I decided to make which. Because they both kind of they cross, just like real political parties, they cross over in some respects. The carnivores are kind of seen as like war hawks, but they're also seen as kind of more liberal in some ways. The herbivores are kind of seen as complacent, kind of like they like old-fashioned stuff, but they're also more peaceful. So it's not like it's a direct correlation to existing political parties. Because like on one hand, you know, the carnivores are they're more aggressive, but they also are more apt to kind of like taking chances with some things, whereas the more, I guess you could call them conservative, herbivores are also more liberal when it comes to or they're conservative like in terms of kind of not wanting to get too involved in other people's problems, but at the same time they're also more apt to kind of just being like socially allowing for things, I guess. It's kind of hard to describe.
Yeah.
But politics is not my forte. I have like a passing interest in politics. But I guess like one thing I want to avoid is I don't want to be preachy. And so the political parties will not be direct analogs to like, you know, the Democrats and Republicans or,
Right.
you know, the Labor Party or whatever. You know, it's going to be very much a mix of stuff. And you know, it's more so, and a lot of this is also just perceived notions. Just like in the US we have this perception that you know, like, oh, Democrats are, you know, they're socialists, you know, and like, you know, and the Republicans are war hawks, you know. It's like if in Lerner's universe it's similar to that, like where how, you know, the carnivores are seen as like really aggressive and like the herbivore or the herd, so the packs are seen as aggressive and the herds are seen as like kind of pushovers and that kind of stuff. But it may not really be the case. They actually may in fact be quite the opposite in several circumstances, but the stereotypes, the perceptions are definitely skewed, and skewed, which again goes back to that very basic, you know, I forgot the word. You know, just their basic things. You know, the carnivore aggressive, herbivore, you know, complacent or whatever. So.
Okay, I see. And to go back to another earlier comment about this concept of offspring, now that I've got you thinking about it, are you possibly considering some sort of like the program where the man seed is implanted into another woman and him and his wife take care of that baby? Because his normal wife can't conceive for them.
So like artificial insemination,
Yeah, exactly.
a surrogate mother kind of thing.
That's what, yes, yeah, like a surrogate mother or father. Are you thinking of possibly doing that or maybe even adoption?
I never really thought about that before. I imagine adoption is actually very big. And see, this is part of the problem that this universe faces, and it's brought up in the story as well, is that with people being able to have partners that they cannot have offspring with, and having so many different species, it kind of causes a bit of a birth rate crisis for some species, and some are actually on the verge of basically dying out. So they actually do have some programs that they're trying to implement where they try to maintain a steady birth rate for some groups. And but I hadn't actually considered the idea of surrogate parents, and that's actually really something I really should think about. It's a good topic to bring up.
You're welcome.
I think that would definitely be the case. I think that they would definitely have surrogate parents. I don't know if, like, let's say a giraffe and a raccoon want to have a baby together. I'm not really sure how that would work because their egg and sperm aren't compatible to begin with. And then they would have to put it into a body that would actually be able to grow that embryo. And I just don't know if, which would they put it into, a giraffe or a zebra or a raccoon, like would it actually be rejected? It's an interesting idea. I just don't know if it would work with all species.
Definitely something to consider.
It's something, yeah, and it ties into something that I read about a while ago. If I remember correctly, it was some German scientists had actually managed to create a human and lagomorph, which is a rabbit, hybrid. They managed to like inject human sperm into like a rabbit egg or something like that, and like they managed to get the DNA to somehow work together, and it actually started to grow, and they terminated it before it even got past a certain,
Before it turned into some horrifying abomination.
And then the movie Splice was made. But I mean, but it really, it was like they actually managed to make like this human rabbit hybrid start to grow. Now, if it would have actually grown to an embryo, who knows? But it was just like, whoa, they can do this. So, who knows,
Well, they said they terminated it.
Yeah, secretly, there's somebody with rabbit ears somewhere in Germany right now. But I think at least adoption would definitely be an option that'd be taken a lot.
Okay, I see. And to go on a quick tangent, to reflect on a character that you've recently developed, Olivia the Oryx. Is this a character that you plan on including in the Londoners universe, or an exclusive story on its own?
Oh, I don't know how much I can say without spoiling. So she is getting her own webcomic, and I really want to get this webcomic done before I get too far into Londoners. She is living in the Londoners universe at the same time as the other characters. However, she is in Canada. So she's on a different part of the world. Whether or not she might show up in Londoners, possibly. I won't say anything else besides that. But her own story is going to be very different in tone. It does tie into the carnivore herbivore thing I was talking about earlier. But the comic she's going to be in is going to be a kind of like a murder mystery, like a erotic thriller. And I'm a really big fan of 70s and 80s Italian horror, and I think they're called giallo films, thrillers, like murder mystery thrillers from Italy, are just like this amazingly unique genre of film, and very very stylish, very visual, very brutal in some ways, but they're just like just heaps of style, and they were a major inspiration for me wanting to do this kind of story. And but Olivia is one of three major characters in that story, and she gets kind of caught up in this. There's a detective named Roland, and he is a bear, so he's an omnivore species, and he's investigating these disappearances of herbivores in Montreal, and Olivia, of course, being a herbivore, she is tied into this somehow, and he goes to her for information and help and trying to find, basically track down the killer or killers, or kidnappers, and it gets pretty interesting as time goes on. My current idea for the story is that it's gonna be called V, and that the V stands for different things with each chapter of the story. And right now I'm debating. it'll definitely be a lot darker than Londoners will be. But I'm not sure if I really want to have a heavy it'll also have a lot of eroticism in it, but I don't know if I'm going to make it adult. I've considered having the main comic just be like a free web comic, and then I would have a kind of like how Rookus does it. Like, I'll have like the print version, or like a complete version that has the adult scenes in there too. I just don't know, because like, with how dark it gets in V, I don't really know if I really want to have the adult scenes, because it may give the wrong impression of what I'm trying to do. I don't want people to be like, oh man, where's the porn, you know, and they just don't care about the story or whatever. So it's going to be a really interesting tightrope to walk that story. But it's also going to be a very interesting project to work on. But I think you actually interviewed Rechan, who did the Will of the Alpha anthology. And I was contacted by Fur Planet, and they asked me, you know, would you like to do this cover for an anthology? And I was like, yeah, sure. And and basically the only I don't think I talked to Rechan. I think I just talked to them about this stuff. But basically they were like, okay, he wants a image of like two characters like bound in like corsets and whatever, and they have like gags, and then they have leashes going up to this silhouetted figure in the background. And so I did that, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna make a male and a female. The male be a fox, because everybody loves foxes.
Obviously, yeah.
Make him a male. And then I was like, okay, what should the female be? Let's do something a little more like exotic. Let's see, I haven't drawn an oryx yet. So I was I designed her, and I decided to give her kind of like a slightly punk look. And then I was like, I really like this character. And they had asked me to do the interior illustrations, and I said, actually Rechan asked me, and himself, he's like, I love the cover, can you do the interiors? And I said, no, I first off, I'm not too experienced in bondage stuff, so I don't think I could really do it justice. It's not really my thing, especially if it's really heavy. I'm just kind of like, ugh. But and also I just really didn't have the time to do like, I don't know, like 10-20 illustrations for the interior stuff. So he got somebody else to do the interior stuff. But I later asked him, I was like, I really like this character, and I think I may have a story for her. So I basically was only told to draw a character, but is there any kind of like copyright? He's like, no, no, it's your character, just go do whatever you want. He's actually been whenever I post a picture of Olivia on FA, he pokes me out with a note. He's like, do you want to do a collaboration story? And I'm like, yeah, but I want to get her main story told first, and then you can have, you know, your own take on her, but I want to tell her main story first.
Well, man, I'm definitely looking forward to that then.
I saw your video review of Will of the Alpha, and I laughed so hard during the Raiders of the Lost Ark scene he put in there. I was like, I probably shouldn't be laughing, but I can't help it. I don't remember who was the person who did the interior illustrations.
I don't know either.
But oh, that was so funny. it's not that I don't like illustrations, I mean, but it's just the way he did that was just so funny. but yeah, so V ties into Londoners. I wish I could say more, but it's major spoiler stuff, and they're both pretty massive projects. So maybe like in a couple of years we'll come back and do another interview, and I'll be able to talk into a lot more detail about the philosophies and the making of these stories.
And hopefully they will both be very into their story by then.
Hopefully. I really wish I could talk about some of these stuff, because there's so much stuff I want to say. And it's the same thing. It's the same problem I have with my adult comics. Like, I really want to say some stuff with them, but I need to wait until Londoners has come out, because then I'm just going to be jumping the gun, and it's going to make the main comic book seem less impactful, because people already know it's going to happen.
Right. Okay, well, since you don't really you don't want to go into any more, can you at least tell me this? Can we expect some hot Bear on Oryx action?
Bear on Oryx?
Yeah.
See that's another spoiler for.
Okay. You don't have to answer then. All right.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Well, let's put it this way. If I were to, oh, I know what you're referring to. You're referring to that by the.
Detective and Olivia, yeah.
Oh no, that. But also, I think you're referring to like the by the horns picture I did, like
Oh, yeah.
the bear guy holding Olivia's horns. So I think if it's just random bear 536 or whatever. I mean, yeah, definitely. But as for the main V story, her and Roland. All I will say is that there is a dynamic between them, but I can't say if it actually turns into something sexual or not.
Okay. This next question doesn't really have anything to do with the story, so don't worry. But recently you've been doing some pinups of Olivia in this blowjob club, as you've called it.
Yeah.
And I remember in one of your descriptions that you said that you aren't really a fan of blowjobs, but yet you've been drawing them recently. What has changed your mind?
I don't really know. It's something that it's kind of like I've always preferred, when it comes to erotic artwork, I've always preferred like the intercourse picture over just like the blowjobs or whatever. But same thing about like I never really cared much for bondage, but for some reason. I guess it ties into her kind of submissive nature, as she's kind of like pleasing masters or, or as a club, she's just kind of, being directed in what to do. But I guess I kind of see in her case at least it's like a subservient thing, and she's usually, if she usually has like a collar on or like a chains or she's tied up or something, so. It's kind of like a sex slave fantasy, I guess, for her. I think I also noticed that like I had a kind of like a deficit of that kind of material in my gallery, and for some reason she just kind of became the character that kind of took on that mantle of sorts. I do intend, of course, to draw pictures of her doing other things, but. It's just that for some reason that was just kind of what I kind of clung on to when I was drawing her, and it basically I think I've drawn like three or four pictures of her doing oral, and I don't have actually done anything that I've actually finished of her doing anything else, so very very interesting. Of course, each character kind of has their own thing.
Yeah.
Puzzle has her cream pie fetish, and Nightshade has the kind of femdom thing going on. So Diamond's just whatever. Does everything. So total nympho. And I should probably also mention that all my characters, their sexual behavior is tied to their personal histories. Nightshade has a abusive backstory regarding men. So she is very dominant towards men as a kind of protective behavior. Diamond had a very restrictive childhood and early adulthood, and she basically rebelled, and so part of her rebellious nature. She's not like an alcoholic. She's not a drug addict. Her way of going into rebelling against her family was to basically just become a nympho. I won't say why Puzzle is into hers. That's a big spoiler.
Okay.
But yeah, so the psychology is something that I've always been interested in. Like, why does this character behave this way? And it's like I a lot of people just think that it's just that's just how they are, but there's actually reasons for it, and I'll be going into that in the Londoner story. Also, Olivia, the reason why she's into what she's into is is also explained in V. She confides in Roland and tells him why she likes being dominated, likes being kind of like a sexual slave. She explains why she's into that. And it ties into a tragic backstory. I guess most of my characters have tragic backstories. Interesting. Anyway, so yeah.
Well,
there's a lot more under the surface than what it seems like, and I really hope that when I get the webcomics up and going, people will see that and they'll have new insights and appreciations for the characters.
Well, I would definitely have to give you a lot of kudos for putting so much thought and effort into developing and fleshing out this universe.
Oh, I love universe building. It's partly why it's taking so long to finally get around to getting these stories, these webcomics under production, is because I'm always like, now what if I do this? No, how about that? I mean, like, for instance, in 2006, I had a comic that I published in Genus called... Day In, Day Out with Diamond, and it was like this little story where Diamond goes to the safari strip club, and it talks about the characters she meets, and she comes home and puzzles, you know, at home she's, you know, destroyed the kitchen trying to cook and all that stuff, and I mentioned things like Dax, the wolf character, he was like a male stripper, and that's something I've totally changed. Like, Dax is now actually a musician in the current story. Actually, Coffee Meat originally was going to have Dax. I found that Dax is not an aggressive character, and whereas Sebastian, who's kind of like a businessman, he is a lot more direct when he wants to be. So I decided to make Sebastian the character in Coffee Meat.
Oh, okay.
But and other things like Glitter, I used to take commissions where Glitter would be of guys and stuff like that, but I've actually decided to make Glitter into a lesbian. She works at a strip club. Yeah. She kind of is like the maternal character towards the other girls. So she kind of looks after them. She kind of keeps a clean house. So she's kind of like the mom of the group. But yeah, she's actually a lesbian. So it kind of frustrates some friends of mine. You know, they're like, you made this character into a lesbian, but I had the hots for her. You know, so, sorry. But I wanted to do this. So. But yeah, so it's always been kind of being changed. And I just like to tinker with stuff. And so it ends up being a case where when it finally does get out to being, when it finally gets finished, it's actually, you know, it's a lot more complex, I guess. Like, I was referring to, like, the character psychology and the racial tensions, stuff like that. But that's stuff that didn't exist 5 years ago when I was working on the initial ideas for the story. It wasn't until, you know, the last couple of years I actually started really working on that. So, I think it runs a fine line between it being, well developed and in development hell. Yeah, I spend so much time working on it that eventually it just never comes out because I just sit there still tinkering with it. It's just like we were talking earlier about finishing a picture. At some point you just got to say enough, you know, and just walk away, or, well, finish it, of course, and then walk away. So
do you plan on this to be like a once a week comic?
At least, yeah. What I'll probably do is I'll probably finish a complete chapter, whether that's 20, 30, 40 pages, I don't know. And then I will either do it weekly or biweekly. And then while that's uploading, I'm working on the next chapter. So that way I don't have a break. There won't be like, you know, like a year-long break between pages. Because that really... I think that's one thing about webcomics is that you really got to make them consistent. If you stop, if you take breaks or whatever, it kills the momentum. Especially since, if you think about it, we're so used to having comic books where we would just flip through them. You know, we'd have the entire chunk of story right there.
Right.
And now we have to like deal with, one page every week, and people are speculating what's going to happen next. People are like calling it now, ends with this, an anvil falls on their head or whatever. Of course, it doesn't end up being the case because, the story's already written, and the artist is just kind of delivering it piecemeal. So it in a way, it really kind of it hits this interesting rhythm that you have to kind of, in a way, you almost have to make each page be its own little self-contained thing, but you also have to make it kind of make you want to go to the next page. And if you get to a point in your story where you have a page that doesn't have like what's going to happen next, or even if it does, and then you don't upload for like a year or something, you're either going to lose your audience because they're just bored, or they're going to be just frustrated that like you ended on a cliffhanger kind of a thing.
Right.
It's a really fine line to walk on, but it's one of those things I think that you're going to see becoming kind of an issue with a lot of comics is that, when they're collected into like a paperback format or like an ebook or whatever, and you have the whole thing there, you see how consistent it is. But when it was delivered one page at a time, the rhythm can be really, it could either really screw up the rhythm, or it could maybe be beneficial. It depends, I guess. But it can be really interesting seeing how that works out. Yeah, it's definitely something that I had to consider when I'm making the comic. There may be some pages where I'm like, oh god, I can't just post one page. I need to post like three. So maybe there'd be like a week where I post two or three pages, and then the next week it's only one page or whatever.
Yeah, because it's like one of those special cliffhanger updates.
Or maybe it's like a one thing that I wonder about with webcomics is how do they do dual page spreads? Like two page spreads. Like there are some comics I've read that have these amazing, like two page spreads. There's a book I read, Frank Miller's Ronin, and it's like an 80s graphic novel, and like the last like 6-8 pages of the graphic novel are literally like a fold out poster of like one gigantic image. And it just keeps going and going and going. And it's like, God, this is a huge, like the final page is like the size of like 8 pages. And you're just like, God, they can't do this with webcomics. Or if they did, it would have to be like a clickable link, because it wouldn't fit in the dimensions that they have for like the webcomic space, because the webcomic space is usually just like one portrait size, aligned image space. And that's it. So it's just digital has its drawbacks, but it also has its, its positives and stuff. And,
like Infinite Canvas?
Yeah, I was about to mention that, the Infinite Canvas thing. I mean, it's a neat idea, but at the same time, if the Infinite Canvas doesn't really work well if you're, like, on a cell phone trying to read the... It's like you got to scroll everywhere, even on computers. You have widescreen and then you have standard. Most web pages will still use standard... screen aspects, because they understand that people are looking on, some people still use CRT monitors for their computers. Some people still use, the 4x3. They use cell phones, to look at stuff. So they try to keep all the pertinent information right in the dead center. And then like the wallpaper or whatever, or just like a simple color is like the left and right sides for like the widescreen. So it's just but yeah, the Infinite Canvas is it's something that's an interesting idea, but it's also kind of, there's something to be said for uniformity and conciseness. So
understandable.
Wild world future.
Yeah. So since you're so concerned about development hell, do you have a set date, a concrete set date of when you want to start releasing pages in an actual webcomic?
Well, part of me wants to say that later this year I would definitely be releasing the comic, but part of me also wants to say that part of it comes down to V and Londoners are set in the same universe, but the importance of V doesn't come into play until about the halfway point of Londoners. And V is a much smaller project. It's probably going to be about 100 pages, maybe 150 pages, whereas Londoners is like kind of end up being like 400 or 500 pages long. So part of me thinks that what I should do is do Londoners, but at the same time, I want to start getting Londoners out so I can start being open about some of the character dynamics and some of the stuff that happens. I want to be able to, you know, it ties into some of my adult comics. I want to be able to say, you know, okay, this happened in the Londoners comics, so now I can finally make a comic about this, about explaining more about what happened, you know, go into more detail. But I also don't know if it would be a good idea to have two webcomics up at the same time.
Oh yeah, that would just cause too much problems.
That's a big concern. And the thing is too, is that webcomics, you know, free webcomics, I do art for my sole income. So relying exclusively on a webcomic doesn't really bring in enough money to keep myself or for the roof over my head. And so like, yeah, my adult comics are my main source of income and commissions and such, but those also take away from the time that I would spend working on the webcomics. And the webcomics are massive projects, so they are definitely time eaters. So it's a real conundrum, you know, because it's like, on one hand, I want to just spend all my time working on the webcomics, but on the other hand, I wouldn't make any money doing that. And I need money to keep myself alive, obviously. And so I am stuck still doing commissions and adult comics, which I do enjoy, but I would like to kind of tone down the amount I do on that and focus on the webcomics more. So it's a weird conundrum. And doing two webcomics at the same time would probably just – I just don't know if that would really work out schedule-wise. So, yeah.
Okay, no, that's fine. And whichever path you choose, I wish you the best of luck with that. But for sure, or well, not for sure, but we might possibly, just maybe, seeing the start of Londoners this year.
It depends on... Okay, so like right now, I'll tell you, like, my schedule right now is that I'm currently working on a new adult comic. I have like 3 or 4 pages left to finish sketching. And then I begin the inks and stuff. And it's a comic that has Nightshade and Patrick. I have a sequel to Coffee Meat already sketched out, but I haven't actually like thumbnailed out, but I haven't actually started like working on that proper. I have a collaborative comic with my girlfriend Kaylee that we're going to be doing for Anthrocon. That's a 1920s jazz age comic. And so I have a comical UFO abduction comic that has nothing to do with my other characters. It's totally original. I've had it like sketched out for about 4 years now, and I finally decided I should probably get this under. I think that what I will probably do is I will probably, because this is for like the first half of the year, I will probably focus the second half of the year mostly on my webcomic projects. And what I might do is I'll probably get the first chapter of Londoners sketched out, like on like large format sketched out, and then I'll probably get V started, like improper. Like I'll probably get colored and put online and all that stuff. And maybe I'll try and fast track V so I can just kind of get it done in like half a year or a year. And so then like next, like 2014, I have Londoners coming out weekly, and I wish I could clone myself so I could.
Oh yeah, well everybody does.
Yeah, if I could get more stuff done. Yeah, I would actually say probably the main thing that worries me about Londoners are actually the two main things. One is consistency, like we were talking about earlier, was that you know, does my style change throughout this massive project, or do I keep it the same? And the other thing, probably the main thing actually, is backgrounds. Like, backgrounds are not my strong point, and like I enjoy drawing characters and expressions and stuff like that, but I don't really enjoy drawing inanimate objects too much. And Londoners, I have to make the city feel like a character as well. And I've visited London. I've taken lots of pictures, and I've gotten a lot of experience of being around the city and stuff, and it's just got this kind of mood that's going to be difficult to capture. And especially since I don't normally draw cities and stuff, and so it's going to be very interesting trying to tackle that. So on the other hand, V will have a much different feel to the city. I've never been to Canada, much less Montreal, but I'm going to try and have a certain color scheme to V that's gonna be reminiscent of the Italian horror films I was talking about, or thrillers rather, and specifically Dario Argento's films Suspiria and Inferno. They have this kind of like Technicolor blue-red color scheme going on throughout the films, especially in Inferno, where it kind of has this kind of otherworldly quality to it. And also, there's an anime called Wicked City. It's an 80s film that did the same thing, where they'd use like blue and red as like the primary color schemes for the film. And I see myself doing that. I've kind of hinted at it with some of my pictures of Olivia. There's like this kind of blue and red.
Yeah, I noticed that with that one blowjob pic of Olivia, where it did have the blue and red.
It's me experimenting with the colors on there, but like one of the first images of her in the book will be her walking down a street, and it'll be a side view of her, like a profile kind of shot, but she's gonna be small on the page, and there'll be like this big building behind her, and it's gonna be a direct reference to Inferno, where there's a scene where a character does a similar thing, but like the buildings, the lights in the building, like the kind of underlighting, they're gonna be kind of like this violet color, and it's gonna be kind of like illuminating the building like in this kind of like violet bluish kind of glow, which I've actually seen in real life in San Jose when I've gone to Further Confusion. I tend to be at this hotel that across the street there's like this like library or something that has that same exact thing, and I'm always like, it's like that movie. Or the purple lights and everything. It's just like, oh, that's kind of cool. So, but yeah, so there'll be like that kind of color scheme going on. Londoners will probably be, I imagine the color scheme will be similar to like kind of like a steely gray kind of thing. Ironically enough, when I went to London, it only rained twice, I think, and it was like a drizzle one day, and the last day it was like a full-on downpour. But like, I've always heard London was like really dreary and foggy, but it was like hot and sunny when I was there for the most part. And I was like, God, what is this? It was supposed to be like overcast, and it's just like sun beating down on us, and but like I imagine like the interior places, like the apartments and stuff, are gonna be like color coded to the characters. And then the outdoors are gonna be like this kind of like gray, dreary, urban kind of thing, overcast, and
Very cool, very cool. Well, at any rate, myself and I'm sure many other fans of yours will be looking forward to whatever art you crank out this year, and we will shower you with many vows of praise and all that.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope that I will continue to make work that is appealing.
Of course. And whatever you do release this year, I do look forward to having you back on the show in the future, and thank you for joining me today.
Oh, I would love to come back, and I had a lot of fun. Thank you very much for having me.